Well, welcome to the Racing Post postcast. We're between Christmas and New Year. Chris Cook here, keeping the seat warm for Maddie Playle, who unfortunately is not quite well enough to be with us today. And we've got an absolute ton of good racing to talk about that we've had this week. It's like we've been feasting on lots of really rich food, and now we're having to switch today to some more plainer fare, but lots to look back on. And I'm in the company today of James Stevens and Mark Boylan to help me dissect it and hopefully pick out the right horses to follow. And maybe even the boys have got a better two for Cheltenham that they've lined up following all of the influential action at Kempton, Leopardstown and elsewhere that we've had this week. And bearing in mind, of course, some of these horses, significant Cheltenham type horses, might not be running again before we get to the festival. Straight to the festival. Those are the words that we dread hearing about this time of year. And at the end of this, we'll throw forward to some of the weekend's racing. There's still some good stuff to come at Cheltenham, and some important racing in Ireland as well. We'll see if the boys have got some winning naps for us. So straight in with the Boxing Day action, or St. Stephen's Day, depending on where you happen to be. We had a really unusual, unpredictable result in the King George. Mark Boylan, can I bring you in at this point? Tornado Flyer, could you see that coming at all?
Absolutely not. And I think Willie Mullins is probably just as surprised as I was. He's a horse that has threatened to win a big one at some stage. But did I think it was the King George on a King George that was jam-packed with quality? No. But obviously, this is another example of, you know, how the shape of a race, the pace of a race can dictate so much. He seemed to grow into the race as it went on. And obviously, it's been well documented since that it seems, you know, there were adjustments that probably needed to be made on the speedometer with a few of them. But I have to say, everyone at Leopardstown stand, the parade ring, watching this on, and the roars for Danny Mullins on the ground, people were absolutely just over the moon to see him landing a big one like this. You know, Danny, a huge part of the team in Willie's. And, you know, he's often riding your second or third string there. And, you know, when you're riding for Willie Mullins in those races, you always have a chance. But to pull off a big one like that, and such a big one, very, very sweet.
And as far as I can tell, you know, he's not the kind of guy who's ever complained about his status. He's always been delighted with the career that he's had. But this year in particular, it seems that, you know, he's really flourished. He's had some big race successes.
Exactly. And the first Cheltenham winner as well on Florin Porter last year, pretty sure that was his first. Obviously, he was calling for Statuaire as well in the Royal Bond. You know, he's had some good winners this year. Paul Townend obviously missed some of the year as well through injury. I thought he was absolutely fantastic on Stormy Ireland at Punchestown last season. Col Reavy, the same. You know, Danny, when he gets the right ammunition, when he gets the chance, he most certainly takes them. And very, very popular result here, even though Asterion Forlange continues to frustrate. And I don't know what word you could even use to sum up anymore. He's an absolute head case, isn't he?
He's, you know, he's getting towards being the most frustrating classy steeplechaser I can remember. And I mean, he's quite fun in a way, because, you know, it adds that extra dimension to any race that he's in. You go, well, obviously he could win it, but will he?
He's into that conversation as well in terms of first. He's in the Bywise League for me now at this stage.
Oh, Bywise, goodness, there's some wounds reopened right there for some of our listeners.
Sorry, Chris, too soon.
I mean, just on Asterion, I mean, he obviously came down at the last. Was the race over? I mean, even then, would he have had a chance to make a last challenge, do you think?
I think he was probably beaten, Chris, but yeah. It would have been really pleasing to see him go and do it. You know, that race looked to be absolutely tailor-made from the way. I thought Brian Cooper gave him a really good ride as well to give him every chance, but, you know, he's probably one of those that's going to pop up at the real moment when we're not expecting him, you know, and that's going to be the most frustrating. However frustrating it is now, I think the inevitable feeling when he does win a grade one, he's probably bloody 20-1 or something like that. And it's a day we're focusing on, you know, whatever. It might be Punchestown, for example, the Gold Cup next year, when we're, please God, looking at whoever won the Gold Cup at Cheltenham coming back. He'd probably sting us then and have a good laugh.
Well, and I mean, he's the sort of horse that can influence the outcome, even if it's not a case of, you know, letting himself down. He knocked over, I can't remember the name of the horse, but
was it Janadil in the Supreme?
Yes, was it Janadil? Goodness me.
Captain Elixir Danny, sorry, Elixir Danny.
There you go, that's the one.
Captain Guinness came down as well in the melee, didn't he?
Jumped really erratically, but managed to stay on his feet his own self. What a horse. James, I'll bring you in at this point. What did you make of the King George? I mean, I think there's probably some jockeys who wouldn't mind having another go at riding it, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. I mean, it was a very strange and muddling race to watch. I mean, fair play if you managed to back Tornado Fly, because he was one of the first ones I'd cross off my list, to be honest. I feel it was a race that would have been pretty thrilling to watch as a sort of punter. You know, he sort of, it changed the complexion, but it was quite confusing. And then it was a case of the horse that sort of was ridden patient, the most patient, came and won it. I imagine that the most frustrated jockey will probably be Gavin Sheehan on St. Calvados, who looked like he'd made his surge to the lead and was going to go on and win it, but just paid the price to a horse that was just that little bit more patient by under sort of Danny Mullins, and then just came and beat them late. Confusing race from a form perspective. We know Milena Indo and Frodham really just sort of did a bit too much early on, and that was sort of game over for them. And I suppose as well, Chantry House was massively disappointing, and crikey, doesn't look good enough to win a Forbra Gold Cup, let alone a Cheltenham Gold Cup on that evidence. I suppose it was too bad to be true, and that's the line for it.
I mean, he's gone off the 3-1 fav there. I mean, that shows the quantity of faith that the betting punters generally have in him, and maybe he'll justify that at some stage. But I think this is just one of those you put a line through it, and he's blatantly not run his race.
No, you hope so. But the on the sort of contradictory, we still don't know whether he's in any good form this season, you know, because the only run he only beat one horse and he didn't run any sort of races at all. So, you know, that's a serious old question mark next to his name coming into this season. But yeah, a strange one. I mean, Flanders Over we've not discussed. I thought he sort of ran his race, but he just wasn't quite up to it on the day. You know, he's a year older, perhaps the race just didn't work out in his favour. But I think he had his chance there, and he wasn't one of the ones that you can really draw a line through. He had his chance and he just wasn't quite good enough on the day.
It looked to me like he maybe got tired first run since April, you know, after such a strong pace. Maybe if they hadn't gone such an unforgiving gallop, maybe it would have been his race again.
Yeah, possibly, but I imagine Nichols would have had him absolutely primed for it, and I don't know if it was sort of fitness or such that would have caught him out. I just think he sort of had it on his day. Look, he's not going to go to Cheltenham, is he? He's going to probably go to Newbury for the Denman Chase again, and ahead to Aintree and Punchestown is a little bit fresher, so that's when we can really judge him. But on this evidence, you know, you'd certainly as well look at him and just think maybe perhaps he's not quite the same horse he was a few months ago. But like I say, it's a strange race, it's a muddling race, and it's one we'll be looking back on towards the end of the season and going, what we learned and what we didn't learn almost.
Yeah, I mean, with Frodon, evidently some people were disappointed. I think with a horse like him, who's a sort of, he's a bit of a one-dimensional front runner, and you know, those horses, they need to be left alone basically, and they need things to fall right. And if you get taken on from an early stage as he was, it's, you know, a proper top class 3-mile race is just not going to work out his way. And, you know, in a sense, what this race shows is how fortunate he was the way the last year's race panned out. But I mean, he's so game, you know, I'm sure there'll be other races in his future. Mark, I throw that to you. What do you think?
I think in general, as a race, that I take this, I wouldn't take it overly literally as a form perspective. I'd be very, very encouraged by what I saw from a few of them that have showed up well. But I wouldn't be surprised if we look back at this in 2 or 3 months' time and the horses have gone very, very different directions from what we've seen here. Chantry House, in particular, like the market support that was there, as you suggested, the supreme confidence behind him. Now, it's not confidence that I would have felt myself going into it, but I think in general, I'd be forgiven of some of those that haven't quite given the run in here.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously James mentioned Gav Sheehan on St. Calvados. I'd have a certain amount of sympathy because I think he's just a hard horse to get him under control and keep him under control. And there was evidently a point in the back straight where he thought, I'd better take an interest here, having been quite cool in the way that he rode him. And the horse just made up a lot of ground real fast as some of the ones in front got tired and ended up hitting the front, you know, with the turn for home, which is really way earlier than he wanted to make his move. I mean, I just don't think he's a 3-miler, but he's shown...
No, I agree, Chris. And he came away with a lot more encouragement and more positives than negatives in that run. Like, I thought he was maybe a little bit of a halfway house between getting to that top standard. But, I mean, if he's able to reproduce that in the Ryanair, we know he got within the neck of Min. Now, right. It looks a deep Ryanair with Duralahos and whatever there. But, you know, I would be much more encouraged from that point of view about his overall profile than I was going into the race, to be quite honest.
You have to take him seriously, don't you, wherever he goes. Very good. Well, earlier on that card, we had the Christmas hurdle, another grade one, somewhat less competitive, but still some good, big names, some popular horses in there. And Epitant winning another grade one. James, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I thought it was sort of nice to see her sort of bounce back to something like her best. You know, whether she is as good as the champion hurdle winning form we saw of her past is still yet to know. But it was a step forward significantly from the run at Newcastle in the fighting fifth. And that's evident just sort of given the way she jumped. I thought, you know, she's always been quite a slick jumper, and that's always been one of her real assets, really. And that was the case again on Boxing Day. Yeah, it was a very, very good performance from the horse. And she's clearly, you know, back to that sort of really high level she's at. You know, we know what the champion hurdle's about. Nicky Henderson called it after the race a champion hurdle performance, which is interesting because I think that sort of is a little bit of a point to suggest that perhaps the mare's hurdle isn't going to be her option. And you'd certainly hope so, because she's a former winner and want to see the good horses all turn up for the big championship races. She's as big as 14-1 for that race, which I think is a decent bit of each way value, considering A, she's a former winner, and B, it's roughly about 11-4, isn't it, to place three places. We know Honeysuckle's a complete monster. We know she's probably going to win it again. But look, Epitant is going to be a contender as a sort of a contender of the outsiders. And look, the two-mile hurdling division isn't red hot at the minute, and she's proved that she's deserves her place in that lineup.
I mean, I must say, when I have an each way bet, I like to think that the horse has got some kind of winning chance, and it's so hard to see Epitant beating Honeysuckle. I suppose if you make that bet, maybe you're thinking, oh, Henry de Bromhead's, you know, been out of form, maybe it's not going to come right in time for the festival, but you know, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge between now and then. This race was maybe not all that deep. I mean, Tritonic was in there, but, you know, out again quick after winning at Ascot. Not so sleepy, just, you know, raced too freely. He hasn't shown up. You know, Mark, is this form that's worth taking seriously?
To a point, Chris. I wasn't bowled over. I was glad to see her show up, the enthusiasm she showed. But I couldn't take this as I wouldn't reiterate the statement that a champion hurdle form to me. Although I think our expectations of what is champion hurdle form is probably higher than the standard that's actually there. I don't think there's much depth to the champion hurdle. I don't think there's a whole pile of depth in general to that 2 mile hurdle in the division for quite some time. And, you know, we're certainly not in an era of, you know, Hardy Eustace, Archibald, you know, Brave Inca. It's not of that standard. You know, another advertisement of that is the fact that Appreciated, who we haven't seen since Blown Away the Supreme Field, immediately goes into second favourite for the champion hurdle when we hear he's had a setback and he's not going to run over fences. You know, it's not exactly an ideal preparation. You know, you'd have to imagine that we haven't seen him yet, and no comeback date has been even, you know, mooted at this point. So, like, Epitant is solid. I think she's always going to be vulnerable to something like a Honeysuckle or something that can take a step up. I don't think this was her derby. I think there's surely going to be more to come. We know how good Nicky is when he sets aside on one target and builds from it. But she'll need to improve a whole lot. And I know Glory and Fortune has showed up really well. But, like, God, I would like to see her kick him out of the ground far more. But, you know, in general, that whole champion hurdle picture, I can see the case for her placing. But, like you, it wouldn't be an investment for me at this stage.
I mean, Glory and Fortune comes out as the best horse in the race at the weights. You know, what would have made this race more competitive is if they were all carrying 11-7 instead of Epitant getting the half stone mirror.
We're going to open that can of worms, yeah.
Well, I mean, doesn't it make you laugh? You look at a race like this and you think, well, she's the obvious one, and they're all carrying more weight, including the 4-year-old. How does that work? Would you kill it off?
I'm with you, but I don't think I'd get rid of it completely, but I would certainly decrease it. And I think that we can stretch this as far as if you're a big Sharjah fan, you'll look at this as well, going, well, look at the champion out in the last few years. So look, I'm all for decreasing it. I completely agree with you. And if Chris Cook, I manage to be right and that Epitant does place, we're going to be looking at a race where the two horses that have finished 1-2 are the two carrying the least amount of weight, which sort of is shooting ourselves in the foot a little bit. So I'm not for getting rid of it, but I'm certainly for decreasing it.
Okay, and there was a third grade one on that card at Kempton Boxing Day. The Cotto Star Novice Chase, Brave Man's Game. an important winner for the Paul Nicholls stable, and you know he's making into a really nice chasing prospect. What was your conclusion watching this race, James?
Yeah, it was a set build to be a real sort of top race, and I suppose I was a little bit disappointed in the way that I just don't think Ahoy Senor jumped to really give him any sort of chance. You know, when we sort of look back at what he did at Newbury, all right, it might not have been absolutely 100% perfect, but it was significantly better than what we saw at Kempton. I was in the Brave Man's Game camp for this race just because I thought he would handle Kempton a lot better. And I suppose he did. His jumping, though, was what won it, to be honest. That was what I think made the difference. He was a very, very good winner. You know, he's a horse that's got a real nice way of just sort of getting over his fences and then just quickening slightly after them, especially sort of towards the end of the race. And I think that's a sign of a really, really nice horse. And the way he did it suggested he's going to be a serious player next year's King George. I mean, look, we've just talked about the race this year and there's nothing in it that you're looking at and saying, well, they're going to be very tough to beat. So look, he's an obvious candidate for that race in 12 months' time. When Paul Nicholls says this is the big target, you just know that every road is going to lead back to it. So he's going to be an obvious player in that. And he had a RPR of 162, which is the best in 9 years. So it suggests that he's a pretty good winner. Ahoy Senor just touched on there. I'm not one to sort of write him off completely. You know, jumping can be improved. Not always, but it can be improved. So that perhaps is something in his camp. And second of all, I think he's going to be well suited to a more galloping track, perhaps even Cheltenham. That might be a track that suits him. But again, you know, he's going to have to improve his jumping if he's going to be getting around there with a chance. He's off to Wetherby next, I believe. So very interesting to see what he can do. But my God, that novice chase division is looking very hot at the minute, isn't it?
I guess so. I mean, I was absolutely flabbergasted that they sent him off favourite. God knows I love a Scottish trained horse and I wish he'd won. And I was excited for him that day. But the idea that he's, he had a more obvious chance than Brave Man's Game, that was surprising to me. Mark, what conclusions are you drawing from this race?
Yeah, just jumping and track. They're the two things that I come away from it. I don't think that track is, you know, as Gavin Lynch, as he wrote in the column in the Racing Post on Saturday, on Friday with the falling of Christmas. If the connection to Brave Man's Game were drawing up a track and conditions to try and beat Ahoy Senor, this was pretty much it. I had similar kind of surprise to yourself about the market. It wasn't one that I got involved in myself, but I would have had it the other way around. But jumping Ahoy Senor, I'd be interested to see which way he goes in this, because it could either put hairs in his chest and, you know, you could learn a lot from it and you could see him more nimble, Ahoy Senor, when he goes somewhere else next time, or it could dent confidence. So we saw another horse at Leopardstown in a beginner's chase, who I'm sure we'll touch on later on, who fairly blew the picture wide open again for the Brown Advisory. So, you know, if you emerge from this race on the 26th feeling like that's your Brown Advisory winner, I think you're meant to think again a few days later at Leopardstown.
There's no rush, is there, to pick a horse in that race? Will Brave Man's Game even go to the Cheltenham Festival? You know, Mark, I'm afraid the strength of horse you've got over there is making everybody think twice.
Well, you're giving out about the phrase, it's straight to Cheltenham. Well, if it's straight to Aintree or whatever, that's even worse. But I know, look at it, I think he probably will go to Cheltenham. I know Paul Nicholls has said the owners are game to go, I think. I'd be disappointed if he didn't. I'd really like to see him have a crack at it. To me, if he got beat in the Brown Advisory in March, it's not going to make me think he's any less of a horse if he goes and wins two or three King George's connections might think he can in the future. So I'd be well willing to have a crack at it. And anything can happen. Like last season in that particular race, Monkfish looked untouchable. Did he go off 1-3, 1-4? And, you know, it was work for him. You know, it wasn't easy. And, you know, personally, I'd be absolutely all for the more of these horses that are willing to throw their hat into the ring and make it a race that we're going to remember, because, you know, for all that Monkfish was good, you wouldn't have left Cheltenham saying it was one of the more memorable performances of the festival. So all the more the merrier, bring it on.
Absolutely. Well, you'd love to see him there. And the thing about Brave Man's Game, he couldn't realistically have been more impressive, more satisfactory to this point with his chasing. He's an exciting prospect for sure. Very good. And then Leopardstown's Christmas Festival was also underway the same day, St. Stephen's Day. And we had a Grade One over there. The Racing Post Novice Chase, no less, won by Fernie Hollow. Mark, I thought he's obviously won it. He's done what's necessary. Could maybe have been more impressive. Is that fair?
Could have been. I think certain factors have probably not ideally helped him. I think the omission of the fence wasn't ideal for him. You know, they had gone at what appears to have been a good gallop. Riviera de Tell is typically a front runner, obviously, and she, no, as Willie Mullins put it, I think no horse kind of got close to her in beginners or novice chases this season. So, to my eye, it looked a very, very solid run race. I think that close home, they were feeling that. I think Paul Townham was just trying to hold on to Fernie Hollow. You know, in an ideal world, he would have committed maybe with the last fence in mind, but it just wasn't an easy, probably wasn't an easy scenario to gauge from a riding point of view. I think he can be more impressive in different circumstances, but the regard that they hold this horse in is pretty, pretty strong now. You know, you get that feeling that he's, whatever they have down there in the novice chasing division, they hold him very right at the top of it. You know, and look, I'm not saying there was great depth to this race beyond the top two. And obviously, Riviera de Tell was getting £13 from him. And I think that weight allowance helps create the picture that Fernie Hollow was more impressive than he might have looked the length and a half with a margin. But, he'll have work to do to keep stepping up, won't he?
That's a very fair point. And Riviera de Tell has actually been putting together some really good chase runs so far this season. For all this, you know, she's only a four-year-old filly, and some people might be looking at that and not taking her seriously. I think this is probably quite strong form. Very good. So that was Boxing Day. We move on then to Monday, an absolute ton of good racing, headed, at least from my perspective, by the Coral Welsh Grand National. You know, absolutely mad 20-runner handicap, won by Sam Thomas, the third year in a row that a Welsh-based trainer has won this race. I don't think it ever happened before. James, were you all aboard the I Will Do It gravy train?
No, I'm afraid I wasn't, but that's the story of my festive period, unfortunately, Chris. I think it was I think Sam Thomas deserves credit, a lot of credit here, actually. This is a real good plan executed. The Welsh National, you know, it's a really unique test, but it's not one that's sort of hard to know. You just got to love jumping, tough ground, and just be able to really just stay and jump and just keep going and going and going. And he found a horse who he thought had the right credentials, went and won the trial, and he's now going to run the big race. You know, this is a horse who's improved a lot for going over fences this season. He was over hurdles last season, and to be honest, his last start before going over hurdles was pretty poor, to be honest, his jumping especially. So they've really got him right, and he's now gone and won two big races. And for Sam Thomas, this was a really, really good training performance, a big day in his career. But, you know, this was a real plan that paid off. It was a bit of morning money. So, yeah, it was a good Welsh Grand National. Not necessarily a vintage one. You know, there are only five finishers. It's hard to sort of know who ran their race and who just didn't sort of handle the conditions of it. Highland Hunter's actually gone down a pound for finishing second, which I thought was quite interesting. He's probably going to continue to run well. And you'd imagine him and Trucker's Lodge, who was third, might all end up in the Midlands Grand National. Whether I Will Do It will turn into a Grand National candidate, I don't think he will, because I think he just wants this real thorough test of a heavy ground and a Welsh National. And to be honest with you, Connections look to enjoy themselves. So I don't think they'd be bothered if they're going back there with a live chance next year. The only other interesting thing I've got from this race is I thought Trucker's Lodge ran a really good race. He was in first time blinkers, or I think it was blinkers. He ran a really encouraging race. He's quite a good jumper. He's rated 150 now, and sort of he's nine, not getting older. I wouldn't mind seeing him in a cross country. That's the one thing I watched the race back and thought he might be an interesting one. He did make one big bad blunder, but usually his jumping's pretty good, and he's got a big rating now. So I wonder if Paul Nicholls might go down that route with him.
Very interesting. Mark, is this a race that you particularly enjoy getting involved with?
It's not something now that the shillings would be totally dispensed on, but I always enjoy the race. And, you know, it is one of those real rugged stay and chase. I thought the Big Dog had this sort of race written all over him, but he disappointed and, you know, kind of back to the drawing board with him. But I enjoy the winner's profile. I must say, I love horses like this that when they start, rise, you just never know where it's going to end. Obviously, they've had to exercise patience with him at different times when he's been off, I think, for the guts of a year there at one stage. You know, I love seeing this, and it's a horse where you don't know the ceiling is at this stage. You know, this, as we mentioned with the National at Aintree, it's a very different skill set required for that than you're going to require here. But, you know, Midlands Nationals type of thing, he'd be very, very interesting. And good to see Sam Thomas having a nice horse like this, man on the up as well.
Yeah, I mean, I always think it's such a grueling race. It's almost hard to expect the winner to do much for the rest of the season, you know, because having left so much on the field on that particular day. But yeah, a well-handicapped winner and just a stable going the right way. And of course, also in the same race, we had Native River running for the very last time. You know, really fine Gold Cup winner from 3 years ago. Just a tremendously game horse, not the fastest, but always doing his best. And it's good to think that he'll have a long and happy retirement. Now, earlier on the Chepstow card, we had the Coral Finale Juvenile Hurdle, won by Porticello. Quite a nice performance, but maybe the talking point of the race, James, was at quite an early stage when Forever Blessed, who's sent off favourite, suffered some interference.
Yeah, very, very sort of muddling race. And it's interesting that a race with so few jumps with a couple omitted turned into the hurdling was what we were talking about. But yes, it was a interesting sort of moment and Forever Blessed chance completely gone by the sort of interference. A brilliant sit to stay aboard, but the chance was gone. Yeah, a muddling sort of race, but I don't think that it impacted Porticello in any way, who was a really impressive winner. I mentioned the hurdles that were omitted. It meant that I think they raced for about, I think the running was about just over 4 furlongs, which is quite extraordinary, really. It was almost like a bump of a juvenile hurdle, but it was a proper staying test. That's what it made the race even more than it usually is. This is usually one of those. I mean, Bristol Demai won it not too long ago, and he was no 2 mile hurdler, was he? So, you know, this horse is going to be interesting going forward. To be honest with you, I sort of spoke to Gary Moore after the race and he's sort of umming and ahhing about the Triumph. And I don't think that's because he's necessarily thinking about the Irish. I just think that this horse is a chaser and he's so different to sort of what we've seen in the past. The only one we can sort of relate to is Nassalam, who was second in the race last year and has since gone chasing. So I think this horse is going to be campaign quite lightly this season, and next season will be about sort of making good use of that four-year-old chase allowance and trying to go as high as he can there. But he's a good horse. He stays well. He handles cutting the ground, and he's one we'll be hearing a lot more of. I better mention the second as well. I think I caught your eye when I mentioned Saint Seagal at 50-1 for the Triumph, and I still haven't given up on him, even though I was somewhat pulling my hair out a little bit when I saw him travelling so well and outstayed. He's a little bit inexperienced a little bit keen in the early stages. He's one. Was at Bangor, but he travelled and tanked through the race, thinking like the most likely winner. Maybe he was outstayed. Maybe the sort of the keenness got the better of him. But I think when he sort of learns a bit more about the game, he'll be a nice horse. Whether he's going to win the Triumph, I'm not sure. But look, he's a big price, and I haven't seen anything that's completely blown me away in that division yet.
Tell you what, I'd completely forgotten you'd put up that tip. What's happened to the 50-1? Is it still available? Have they pushed them out to 66s maybe?
I think he's 33s in places, but I haven't had a thorough look.
Well, you got the value. I mean, second in a grade one when conditions might not have been ideal for him. That's not bad, is it, on the way to the Triumph?
No. And I think there are things that, he's clearly got a massive engine because he's keen and just things didn't go right for him, as you say. Look, you know, there's a long way to go for that. I imagine that he'll probably turn up for that. There's a Triumph trial, isn't there, on trials day? I think it's the first race. We'll learn a lot more about him then, to be honest. But he's clearly got an engine. And he's pretty good. Whether he's, as I say, going to reach that height, we don't know. But it's a nice bet to have, especially after that encouragement.
Well, I think you're very much alive there. Yeah, Mark, just on the interference, I mean, Tommy Dowson's obviously got 13 days for allowing his horse to go back to the rail and interfering with Forever Blessed, whose trainer, Harry Fry, is very cross about that. Were you surprised by that, the length of that suspension?
I don't know if in terms of overall consistency, if it stacks up with everything, but it's the sort of penalty that I would be comfortable seeing in scenarios like that, to be quite honest. Like in different scenario, we have a proper injury to deal with here. We could have, you know, a horse and rider, and it's not to pick on the rider in question in any way at all. It's just a general theme I find that, you know, if this is going to be the way forward, I'm happy to stick with it. But we see other examples that possibly don't go and get it severely punished. But just actually to throw out there as well, I know we're talking about Saint Seagal there. I thought Forever William is a potential one for the Boodles. Now, listen, maybe I'm mad. I think the last four or five Boodles have been won by Irish horses. But I really like the way he stuck at it. Messy race. You know, again, one on an upward curve. See the Moon as a stallion, probably, you know, not a massive thing, but I like him for juvenile hurdlers. You know, in the last couple of seasons, we've had All Mankind and Tritonic, both by See the Moon, go off 7-2, 4-1 for the triumph. Just like the way this fella is going, kept at it when he could have down tools in the closing stages and testing ground. And, you know, Alan King, I have a respect for this horse if he did line up in something like a Boodles, for all that he'll need to take another little step up the ladder somewhere along the way.
I just wish he would calm down a bit if that's he's going to win a race like that. He raced a bit free, didn't he?
He have a strong pace to run it, do you know what I mean? And yeah, more professionalism, more experience. Do you know, look, he's not the finished article yet. I'm under no illusion that there are steps that need to be taken to get to a level like that. But if he got there off a low weight and he was a nice price, I wouldn't be totally discounting him each way.
Very good. And there was also more racing at Kempton on the 27th. We had the Desert Orchid Chase with Shishkin dispelling all the doubts that there might have been. James, were you feeling many doubts, or was this basically what you expected from Nicky Henderson's speedy chaser?
Yeah, I mean, I expected him to win, but I think everyone did. And he did it in the way that we sort of expected of him. You know, he's got this huge reputation, and everything we've seen of him sort of since that sort of Cheltenham Festival win in the Supreme has been absolutely outstanding. Look, he's a bit of a unique sort of type compared to sort of Sprinter Sacre and Altior, who he's always going to be sort of compared against. You know, he does need almost a little bit of encouragement, but he does find plenty, and that's a superb way of going about your business, I suppose. I liked how he did it. I thought he was pretty straightforward. It never really looked in any doubt. And yeah, look, you know, we were unsure about him and his sort of how he was going to be going forward, whether we were going to see him back to that sort of level, because there was obviously the Tingle Creek where he didn't run. But I think he's put all that to bed now. That was a performance that really stamped him out as a festival banker almost. You know, you're looking at him going, well, this horse is absolutely something else. You know, look, there's obviously a lot of good quality in that division, but people are going to get behind this horse because he's got something special about him. I was having a look through the sort of history of this race. Since 2013, 180 Altiora and RPR off, and he won the Champion Chase that season. Sprinter Sacre had an RPR of 171 in 2015. He won the Champion Chase that season. And the next best was Nuba Negra, who had 167, and he was beaten a neck. Shishkin had 175. So, if you go on that basis, then he's a banker, surely. But no, he's a very, very good horse. And look, it's brilliant seeing these real superstars perform on the big stage.
Mark, I must admit, I was hoping for a bit more from Grenadine. After his previous run, he was giving £3 to Shishkin, so realistically that was going to make it very difficult for him. Did you share my feeling that you wanted to see a bit more of an impact from him?
I totally agree. I don't think you can take away from what Shishkin did. There you go, from the side that he does.
right.
I don't think you can take away from what Shishkin did. But yeah, Grenadine, it just felt like he left his race behind him at Sandown. And, you know, it's not a bad race to leave behind when you can pick up a grade one last time. But I thought there was a little bit more to come from him. I thought he could get him in trouble a little bit more. But really, with this guy, you're sailing against the wind when you're taking him on. He's very, very good. To put it mildly, I just loved how he came down to the last, and you know, he was all guns blazing at that stage, but he still had the frame of mind to adjust himself and get in right. Nico obviously knows him very well, but it was a real wow performance. I just cannot wait to see him take on an Ergamine. I hope to God we don't have any last minute setbacks or anything like that, because to me it's the clash of the festival if Shishkin and Ergamine get the chance to absolutely give us a real cracker in the Champion Chase. I really don't know, because at the start of the season, I came in feeling Shaq and Persuas still had more to give. I was forgiven of his run last season. Mm. You know, you can't have in any shape or form be happy with the way this year has gone for him, between setbacks, the Tingle Creek run. It's, you know, and Willie Mullins has explained that the chestnut came off his hock in the Tingle Creek, comparing it to something like a long distance runner breaking his big nail, so to speak, and trying to run. He was, you know, that was a counter for what maybe the soreness was. And at that point, I'm kind of going, right, I can get over that. Now he has a hamstring issue. I find it hard now, even particularly as he rises in years as well, that he can maybe master these two at Cheltenham on this occasion. And, you know, to me, Inergamine has been absolutely faultless in his comeback at Cork. And he's just so exciting. I mean, this is, I hope to God that nothing goes wrong, because Shishkin has upped the stakes again. And if Inergamine goes for the Clarence House, it would be great to see him say game on, Shishkin, and see you in March.
Fantastic. Yeah, there is a clash that we can look forward to. And on the same day as Shishkin winning the Desert Orchid, we had a potential challenger to the Arkell Chase in Fernie Hollow, in Edward Stone, who came 10 lengths clear of his rivals in that grade two, got within about half a second of Shishkin's time, if I remember rightly, and carrying slightly more weight. James, were you impressed?
Yeah, he's been a very, very good horse. And as you say, you know, from the clock perspective, that was pretty good. He's sort of taken quite well. He's quite a professional sort of at his new discipline, isn't he? Sort of just does it in a way of a horse that seems like he's doing it for more than three or four runs. You know, he's been well campaigned with from Alan King. You know, he's sort of won a grade one, now he's done a grade two. Look, he deserves to be up there in the Arkell betting. In terms of that race, I would be with Fernie Hollow. I think Mark said very, very well exactly what I sort of thought about him, that his performance can be marked up because things didn't perhaps go his way in terms of the way the fences were. And he's a really, really smart jumper, I think. So I don't think that suited him. And as we say, he was taking on a horse who is A, very good, and B, probably had that race as marked as a sort of a Gold Cup because of the allowances. But I think Edward Stone deserves his place. You know, he's going to put up a real challenge to whoever does turn up in the Arkell. He's does everything very, very well. And he's massively stepped forward since his very good form over hurdles as well.
Mark, I mean, I'm just looking at the Arkell market here. I mean, he's mostly 6-4 Fernie Hollow, bits of 7-4, 1-2-1. Whereas you can get 9-2, even maybe a bit of 11-2 about Edward Stone. That's going to be where the value is, isn't it?
Probably, but it's probably a little bit too big. But I still think Fernie Hollow is the most likely winner. And I don't want to be fenced much, but if you give me a free bet, I'll be back in Fernie Hollow. For all that, I do think Edward Stone could be a point or so shorter. He's a really likeable horse, isn't he? Like, the way he goes about it, he's got that professionalism from being over hurdles and competing in good races. You know, I thought he ran particularly well last year in the county. I just think that there's maybe a little gap between what he's doing and what Fernie Hollow can do on his day. But, you know, there's another horse there further down the market, Houghton Colours. He threw his hat into the ring as well over Christmas. He was pretty good, and he's a nice young horse. They've always thought an awful lot of him as well. You know, he's probably been his own worst enemy at times, but God, when everything clicks with him, he's very good. I just feel that there might be more in the tank to come from Fernie Hollow, whereas Edward Stone at the minute, I won't say he's reached his peak by any means, because he's still only 7 going on 8, and he still only had the 5 runs over fences, I think. But I just feel there's a little bit more from Fernie that we haven't seen yet, and that's probably reflective of the price, isn't it?
I mean, Houghton Colours, I really liked what he did that same day. It was only a beginner's chase at Leopardstown. But to me, you know, the fact that there's horses like him who are still sort of coming through from quite a low base, that just helps to show how mad it is that you're being asked to take 6-4 about Fernie Hollow. When there's so many, I mean, that's, you know, you nearly want that about horse getting to Cheltenham and running in the race that you thought it was going to run in. But anyway, very good. Thanks, chaps. We're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, we'll be switching to Leopardstown for most of the rest of the way. Some excellent racing there, important in itself and influential in terms of what's to come later in the season.
New subscribers can get 50% off Ultimate Monthly for 3 months using the code HOLIDAYS. That's 3 months of our Ultimate Monthly members package for just £17.48 per month. For full terms and to claim, visit racingpost.com/postcast.
Okay, and so we had some lots of excellent racing in Leopardstown over the past few days. Envoy LN among the various grade one winners. A bright spot in a difficult week, maybe, for Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore. Mark, what did you make of that? Only 3 runners in the end in his race. What's he achieved?
It really cut up, didn't it? I mean, look, I know everything went well for Shishkin, but God, you'd like to think if he turned up there, he would have kick them out of the way as well for greater prize money and a grade one. But that's besides the point. Envoy Allen wasn't flashy. He doesn't quite look the same horse that he was. I think he's still going to be okay at that trip. I just wonder about where he is this season compared to last season. Now, I know it's a massive jump up when you're talking about novices going to senior company. Some are going to sink, some are going to swim. You know, you can't say he's sinking because he's just won a grade one, but Battle Over Dying to me, he's not a reliable horse to kind of build form around in general, because he can be in and out when he's good. He's very good. But Envoy Allen last season and what we saw from him, you know, I would expect him to put far more daylight between him. Look at Henry de Bromhead's form this week. It hasn't been an ideal week for him. He said as much after Journey With Me won a maiden hurdle. I think he said something along the lines of, oh, get rid of, I don't want odds on favourites, give me 10-1 shots, you know. And he basically saying if Journey With Me won this week, he must be a decent horse the way things have gone for us. But and obviously Manella Indo disappointing in the King George. So I think this it was another grade one, it's job done. But as my boss Richie Forrest has pointed out in his report, it's incredibly rare you see a horse getting pushed out for Cheltenham when he wins a grade one, and that's what happened here with Farms for the Ryanair and the Queen Mother. I find it hard to think that he'll trouble Alaho and a Ryanair, and I find it hard to think that he'd mix it with Chishkinar and Ergamy in the Champion Chase. So I'm disappointed, because I thought that he was going to be the next big thing last season, as so many of us did. But it just hasn't quite worked out like that. The only one thing I will say about him, he did dig in and get down and dirty when he had to. And maybe he's a confidence horse. You know, he had never tasted defeat in his life until it all went pear-shaped for him at Cheltenham. And, you know, he's got a couple of wins in the board, and I don't think that'll do him any harm. You know, there's a few theories you could make about his John Durkin run. You know, you could point to the fact that, you know, he didn't have things all his own way with Alaho there. You could say that maybe he's remembering his previous injury at Punchestown at the festival. There's different things you could draw from it. You know, I'm probably leaning towards the conclusion that he's not the horse we thought he was going to develop into, but he's still a pretty good one on his day, and he showed that here.
James, I don't know about you, but I really like a horse that can win when the yard is reckoned to be out of form. So, I mean, there's out of form and out of form. The de Brumwood horses, some of them are still winning, but their strike rate in the past fortnight has been 6%, and he's gone and won a grade one. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I sort of see what you mean there, Chris. Form is a really interesting sort of angle. I mean, I know we were going to mention Newbury a little bit later, but you think about Jeremy Scott. I was at Exeter when he hadn't had a winner for about 47 days. He had won half an hour later, and now everything he sends out seems to be winning. So form is a really sort of interesting sort of angle to it. But, you know, look, this was a really difficult sort of race to sort of judge whether he's bounced back to form, you know, as we say. And Battle Over Doyen is a very, very hard horse to judge, and particularly over 2 miles, 1 furlong. How good is Envoy LN? I suppose we've still got a huge question mark next to his name. We didn't really learn too much more about him other than that he's still running and still got the sort of same enthusiasm, I guess. I agree with Mark that he did have to battle a bit more, and perhaps he will sort of benefit from that experience. But yes, you know, you're looking at elsewhere at the minute. You know, he doesn't quite seem as sort of impossible to stop as he once did. But yeah, in terms of Henry de Bromhead, Journey With Me, you know, it's very interesting, and it says enough as much about his reputation. Perhaps it says as much about the strength and depth of Irish novice hurdlers that a horse who won a maiden hurdle is now shorter for his festival target than a horse that won a grade one on the same day. So both won it by the same sort of distance as well, really, didn't they, as well? So, yeah, interesting. But look, Henry de Bromhead's got enough firepower. I'm sure he'll be firing on all cylinders before too long.
I definitely think that by the time we get to the middle of March, I would back him to have his string somewhere near its peak. That same day, we as a sport contrived to do a very clever thing. We ran the Welsh National at the same moment, more or less, as the Paddy Power Chase. You know, very similar big field handicap chase, 28 runners, and Schoolboyers came home in front. Mark, was this a winner for you?
No, I didn't get stuck into him. Now, he'd been one that, Jesus, he's frustrating in the sense that there have been days where you could really make the case for him, and it just didn't quite happen. But as it often happens for JP McManus in the Paddy Power Chase, plans can come together, and it's not a race that served favourite backers pretty well. I think now that's only one winning favourite in the last 17 years, something like that. And it was a JP favourite that won. You know, his record here is obviously very, very strong. As for Schoolboy Hours, you go back through his form in particular. You can look at runs at latest exhibition, Castlebaum West, who won this race last year. He was even third in the beginner's chase that Lorena and Manel Indoor won too. And it's just taken a little bit of time to get it together in a race like this. I thought Sean Flanagan was excellent on him, and hat tip to Sean Flanagan as well. Had a very, very serious back injury. 6 weeks is all it took him to get back. He rode a winner in his first ride back in the opening maiden hurdle on a 12 or 14 to 1 shot for Henry de Bramhead. And he comes into one of the hottest handicap chases where there's carnage everywhere. There, you know, there's a few times the horses around him have suffered. He's done extremely well to navigate the passage he has and get his horse rolling. And a big return for him, Sean Flanagan. I give mention there, I thought Ben Dundee, a very, very spirited effort. He likes Leopardstown, and good run from him. Ben Harvey, a rider who in these nationals and, you know, big stay in handicaps before, we've seen him go well. He won an Ulster National previously. And then Jai Dallin, I didn't think he did his entry credentials any harm. Now, this trip 3 miles might just be a little bit on the sharp side for him, but if you watch him back, he's closing all the way to the line. And he really attacks his fences when Conor Orr sends them to him. He could be one if things fall right for him. Hopefully he can be a player in Aintree if all went well. For all that, God knows where we'll be come that time of year. But I was just encouraged by what I saw from him.
Tell you what else, I thought Birchdale ran a big race. And it's a bit of a
throwback. He did, didn't he? Yeah.
He was still in front going to the last. And, you know, this is a horse that was really fancied for the Albert Bartlett that Manila Endo ended up winning. I don't think he's won anything since, but he's got a race in him by the look of it.
Yeah, he did. The cheek pieces on him for the first time, blinkers, something like that. Yeah, geez, he raced with enthusiasm, yeah. Didn't he? You know, yeah. Like, I mean, points there in the race. I'm sure he traded shorts and he went off at 33s. But yeah, definitely encouragement. And Enda Bulger has got a few of those types from JP McManus from different yards over the last little while. And he's carving his way with a few of them now that he could end up having a nice team there come different points of the year. You know, we obviously know he's so good with the cross-country horses. Not too sure if Birchdale now will give himself a chance in a race like that, but he'll definitely be a fun horse now to go to war with. And, you know, liking that bit of better ground as well. He could be one for the summer there. There could be nice races to be won with him. We've got some valuable handicap chases over here, kind of, you know, the likes of Killarney and places like that, where maybe the standard isn't phenomenal for very, very good prize money. And he might just be one for something like that. I don't mean to be doing the horse the service and saying that, because he could end up at better things, but just kind of around the 129 mark or whatever he is, 130. Yeah, he'll be interesting to watch going forward.
Yeah, just getting a win of any kind, that would be, you know, a good thing for a horse with his profile. So the Leopardstown meeting reached its peak the next day with the Savills chase. This is going back to Tuesday, the 28th. And Galvin stormed home to take it off Aplutar by a short head. Mark, what did you make of this race? You know, lots of big names in there, and you could make a case for basically anything. Who were you with in the end?
Who was I with? I was with Melon each way, and probably the story of Melon's life, he was fourth. So, you know, that's there we go. But no, look, he's, in fairness, I don't mean to knock Melon. I've got more stick on Cheltenham preview nights, putting up for races at prices have been made a mockery of, and he often runs well at a price, in fairness to him. He didn't disgrace himself here, but I thought the story of the race was Gordon Elliott and Davy Russell pulling one back. Davy was outstanding on this horse. And Gordon on RTE's coverage over here, you know, it's rare you see him as emotional as he was. We all know the year that's been. We all know the issues that have been there. But this meant an awful lot to him. You got the sense. You know, he decided that it was obviously a difficult year, it goes without saying. But I was so... This Galvin is nearly kind of an example of how Gordon Elliott can do in terms of getting out of horses. Like, he won a bumper at Roscommon. He went to Perth, you know, he won it there. He won places to get, not to do those places of the service, because actually, Perth, there, Roscommon, they're some of my nearly favourite race courses to go to if I was going for a day. So I've not been any way harsh on them, but I never thought that this horse could reach these sort of heights. I thought he could be an Aintree National horse. Not going to lie, I was delighted to see the horse go and do it, but I was looking at him thinking, you've just beaten 172 Aplutard, or 174 Aplutard even. When the British handicapper gets his hands on you for the National, it's going to be good night and God bless. So I'm sure they'll go for the Gold Cup, and I'd be highly surprised if he ends up rocking up with the National. But I was really thought a determined effort from a horse that does stay very well. His jumping in particular was the thing to take from this. You know, one of the nice things around Christmas, I find, is when you turn on racing TV on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day and they show the reruns of the big festivals, like, this horse didn't jump well when he won the National Hunt Chase and still pulled it out of the bag. Like, if he produced albeit we're talking about a different kettle of fish in a Gold Cup, if he did jump like he did at Leopardstown and got into that same sort of rhythm, it's very easy to make the case for him being in the first three. I still think there's probably one or two out there that are better than him to win it. But if he's on his game and we know he goes well fresh, it's very, very easy to see him being in the shake-up for a Gold Cup place-wise.
He's a tremendously likeable horse all round, isn't he? And you know, as you say, I think there's loads of people out there who have backed him for the National that are absolutely gutted about what's just happened. But you know, maybe he'll, if they can get his rating high enough, he can keep the weights down for something else and keep a load of runners out the handicap. James, would you make of this race? Was there a Gold Cup winner in there?
It was a thrilling race, wasn't it? And I agree, with Davy Russell was absolutely superb. Yeah, interesting. It was the horse who sort of stayed strongest and stayed best that won it. And immediately we are now thinking he's a genuine Gold Cup contender. We spoke a bit about him sort of there in the Grand National and such. And yeah, I was thinking that he would be a Grand National horse and wouldn't quite be good enough to win a Gold Cup. But you're going to have to put him in the mix now. You know, a bit like Mark discussed about the Champion Hurdle earlier, sort of that, oh, this horse isn't Champion Hurdle calibre. The Gold Cup isn't very, very strong this year at all. It's extremely weak, really. It's a Plutard was top of the betting on the form of Haydock and had been beaten in the race in the past. And Minella Indo was disappointing the other day. So the market is massively open and it's really waiting for a horse to absolutely propel themselves into that favourites position. And Galvin went close to doing so. I didn't think it was a performance enough to say, well, he's absolutely deserves to be favourite. You know, we do know he's got good Cheltenham form. We do know that he's going to stay the trip. And to be honest with you, the way the race panned out, you would think that given that extra distance in the Gold Cup and given how well he does stay, you'd fancy him to confirm that sort of form in Cheltenham. But yeah, do I think he's a Gold Cup winner? I think he's a contender, but I just don't think I've seen anything yet that would make me want to get stuck into the Gold Cup market yet. I'm really unsure about it at this point in time, I must be honest.
Before we get off this race, I think we've got to put in a good word for Aplutar. Okay, so he's got beat in the end, but only just since the tongue tie was fitted. He's won a Savills, he's won the Betfair Chase by an absolute barrel load. Second in the Gold Cup and, you know, beaten by the width of a cigarette paper and the Savills again when, as we keep saying, the yard is generally out of form. So another mighty run for him. And if you're a fan of him, then there's no reason to be despondent at all. Earlier, we had the Christmas hurdle. This is the sort of the stairs hurdle equivalent for the Leopardstown Christmas meeting. And Mark, all the critical action was right at the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, we've seen Classical Dream in the past get off to an absolute flyer. And whether Paul Tanner knew he was going to do that straight away, Classical Dream decided he was. And you can see Danny Mullins on Floor and Porter, who we know is so effective when going handy. I doubt he was best pleased with how that went for him. You can see the Classical Dream, he's definitely pinched five or six, hasn't he, at the start. And the winning margin is two. Now, I don't think he can as basically say that that's the difference between winning and losing necessarily. But I do think it wasn't a satisfactory start. It wasn't a satisfactory start. If you're the connection to Floor and Porter, you'd have to be frustrated by how it's panned out. But Classical Dream, we've seen him do it before. We've seen him be over-enthusiastic in that sense before. Remember the Morgiana when he was leaping at some of those hurdles. But I was most impressed by how, it was something that Willie Mullins said afterwards. He was speaking to Paul Townend and praising Paul Townend for really getting breathers into the horse at different stages and steadying the tempo and building again and steady. And Paul actually said that Classical Dream was nearly self-policing him in terms of pace. He was the one that was dictating the breathers rather than Paul himself. And I think for a stairs hurdle, when you see horses at times, you know, I know Floor and Porter maybe went against the grain slightly in his, you know, enthusiastic running style last year. But for me, the stairs hurdle, the picture is so open. You have Champ there, obviously, who's a legitimate contender if they're going on that road. Floor and Porter is still a player. But Classical Dream, for me, the worry was that if he just overdid it at that trip. And I just, that side of it, that mentally Paul Townend felt that he was sensible enough to keep a hold of himself in some degree, that was most encouraging for me with a view to the stairs. Because we know even, you know, what the last seven furlongs, two hurdles, plenty of time to, you know, tank yourself into different positions. You know, he's done it really, really well. I think they're talking about going straight to Cheltenham. We don't have a 3 mile grade one at the Dublin Racing Festival. It's one of the races that isn't kind of on that programme there and that weekend. But no, look, he's very, very good. And just give a quick word to Burn a Victory. I know she's beaten a fair margin in the end, but having run very, very poorly in a Grade B handicap hurdle at Navan last time. You know, when she was sent off favourite for it, she was 3-1, something like that, 4-1. You know, she's turned up here and run very, very solid for all that in behind. Some of them haven't turned up, like Abracadabras, etc. But I would absolutely love to see her in a Pretemps final. You know, we know how good a flat mare she is. You know, she's given Buzz a real rattle in the Cesaro, which, and, you know, she's won a triumph hurdle in the past, albeit in fortunate circumstances. But, you know, jumping not being her absolute strong suit, she jumped pretty well here. And as I said to you at Cheltenham on that new course, the two hurdles in the last 7 furlongs, if she was to be qualified for a Pretemps, she'd be taking very, very high order on my list anyway. She'd probably return for something. If they don't go chasing more success like this in graded company, I'm sure they will probably go for the William Fry handicap at the Dublin Racing Festival, a 3-mile valuable one there, and she'd be high on my shortlist there. But I just thought, if he sends her over to Warwick or the gap for a Pretemps qualifier, I would love to see it because it was a very, very encouraging run.
Very interesting. Can I just run the line past you regarding Classical Dream? Because I remember when he won the Supreme, it was ages ago now, he was a horse who kind of lived on his nerves. It's just occurring to me that it might make a difference to him what kind of festival we have. I mean, if we've got a proper big crowd, if we're allowed to have that when we get there in March, then that would be one thing, maybe not necessarily in his favour, you know, but if we're, you know, please God, it doesn't happen. But if we happen to be behind closed doors again, that would really help him, I think.
Something sticks out in my mind when he won the Supreme. What was he keen going to the start or something along those lines? Like,
he absolutely
want to be
was,
absolutely
yeah.
Definite,
he was,
but I remember something that he was, yeah, like, you're talking 2 years ago, probably it'll be nearly 3 years ago, I'd say, by the time we get there. But like, I mean, he would, that would be a benefit to him. I don't think that's as much of an issue as it was, but I just thought that what Paul Tannen was saying, he is coming a fair way in that regard. Like when he won it at Punchestown, you know, he was obviously very, very well backed. He won it like he was a different caliber horse to all the rest of them. But the way he went through the race, and you could call him the winner from a pretty long way out, Patrick Mullins rode him really, really confidently. You know, the fact that he has taken steps forward in that regard would give me great encouragement that he is maybe turning a corner. But yeah, there's a few horses like that, isn't there, that, you know, you'd be thinking behind closed doors festival might suit it. But by God, I hope we're not talking like that, Chris. Don't even put the kibosh on it, because it's Everton we all look forward to over here travelling over. So and I'm sure for everyone over there. So please God, we're not. Yeah.
Well, at the moment, I don't see a justification for it. And hopefully it's not on anybody else's mind as well. James, what did you make of the Christmas hurdle?
Yeah, an interesting race. I think that the start probably made the difference. And I think that we'll be going back and forth as to whether Classical Dream would still have won if they'd started on sort of next to each other. But in terms of sort of looking forward and throwing forward, I think that may have almost helped Champ's chances in a way, in a funny sort of way. I'll sort of explain what I mean. I think that if Classical Dream is going to be beaten in a stairs hurdle, it's going to be a horse that's finishing very, very strongly. And having a horse to aim at is good for Champ. If you watch the long walk back, he sort of idles a little bit. And I think what he wants in his race is something just to aim at, almost like we saw in the RSA where he famously sort of came late to win. And I think having a horse like Classical Dream in there who possibly will be finding a little bit tough on that hill. That's a real stretch of his stamina. I know he stays three miles around Cheltenham as well. Is a sort of a different ball game altogether. But if Champ's got something to aim at, we know how sort of strong he stays. That could be perfect for him. Just continue to fly sort of up the hill and to take him late. That might be really what he needs in this race. I thought Flooring Porter ran well, and yeah, they're going to certainly fancy their chances as well, aren't they, of a repeat, given what happened at the start. I think that's going to be a really, really interesting race come Cheltenham. It's never normally a race that people get too excited about, but those three horses in particular are ones that you could really make really solid claims for. Let's just hope they all turn up.
Very good. And then on to the final day of Leopardstown Christmas meeting. We had the Neville Hotels Novice Chase. This is the sort of RSA equivalent, 3-miler. And Fury Road came good. I must admit, Mark, I was all over Run Wild Fred here. I was fairly confident that he was, with the benefit of all that experience and the big field handicaps, he was going to get the better of Vanillier, and indeed he did. But, you know, he maybe didn't go all that quick from the get-go, and Fury Road had too much pace for him in the end. Is that how you see it?
Pretty much. I think the mistake as well, like he absolutely clouted. I think it was the 10th. And, you know, we're speaking in the press room after. It was a mistake that, you know, in other circumstances, if the race was unfolding differently, you know, you nearly would have pulled him up, possibly. I'm sure it was the correct decision to keep going. I'm not questioning that in any way. But I think Davy Russell was holding on to the horse, just trying to, you know, call on the effort a little bit later. And while we know he is a strong stayer, and Fury Road just has a gear or two there, and the cheek pieces lit him up. It was all very, very smooth for him. You know, Jack Kennedy was fearful that when he got to the front with the fence taken out as well due to the low-lying sun, he was conscious that he got there too early. But it was very, very satisfactory for him. Like, as a race itself, we had incident at the start where Mr. Incredible didn't go with them. He refused. Ashdale Bob, I know he wasn't exactly a top contender in it, but he came back and he was reportedly sore afterwards with a few cuts. On the ropes was disappointing. Just didn't go forward. Vanillier, he ran fine. He kept going, but he looked like he lacked a bit of a gear. And Gavin Cromwell's initial reaction to that was probably that they're looking more towards the National Hunt Chase than the Brown Advisory, having kind of felt the opposite after he won the Florida Pearl at Punchestown previously. I think there's still 14 to 1 about him for the National Hunt Chase. Like, listen, he's going to be taking on the likes of Run Wild Fred again. But if you look at that market, Statler is one of the prominent ones in that. I thought he showed a lot more gears when he won at Fairy House than to be looking at a National Hunt Chase. And Fury Road, Gordon Elliott has said that he is the Brown Advisory is his more likely target. You know, then you go down to High Senor, who's behind, let's say, Vanillier in the market. You'd be surprised if he went to the National Hunt Chase, wouldn't you? You know, Beacon Edge as well. He's actually had a colic issue that stopped him running over Christmas. I'm not too sure how long that keeps him out. But I'm just saying that race could cut up considerably from what the top of the market currently looks like. And 14 to 1 out there about Vanillier in a place, there's still 12s widely available. If you were an each way Shrewdy in that department, I wouldn't say it would be a bad investment at this stage, because he could end up in second favour on the day and he won't be 12 to 1. And you know, Run Wild Fred, I still think he's rock solid for the race. It's funny, I was speaking to Eddie O'Leary for a piece on Christmas plans in relation to Jigginstown a couple of weeks ago, and I put it to him, would it be, you know, it's still not certain, for all that Gordon Elliott has suggested he could be tailor made for the National Hunt Chase, Run Wild Fred, that it wouldn't be certain he'd definitely go there. And he'd very much left it open between the Brown Advisory and the National Hunt Chase. But after this race, immediately Gordon Elliott suggested that Run Wild Fred, he looked like he needed 10 more jumps the way he ran. And I'm kind of thinking in my head, I wonder, are we leaning more National Hunt Chase with that in mind, and that, you know, split them up, let Fury Road have a crack at the Brown Advisory and Run Wild Fred steer clear. So look at that. That was my kind of take from it, that, you know, Vanillier shaped fine, looks more of a stayer. If he got back to his Arrow Bartlett form, you'd imagine he should be in the shake-up. But Fury Road, good winner, but it was always going to take something special to dislodge any of those towards the top of the Brown Advisory after what we saw from Galopin de Champs, Brave Man's Game, etc. It's a red hot race, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I must say, I admire Run Wild Fred for, as you say, you know, he sort of got no height at all at that fence, walked straight through it and didn't seem to lose any momentum whatsoever. You know, he might not be the fastest, but he's a tank. He just keeps going. James, was that your feeling? What did you make of it?
Yeah, again, you know, you sort of, after what sort of happened with Brave Run's Game and Galopin de Champs, you're sort of watching this race and looking at the sort of profiles of them and thinking, well, we want to see something really special here. And I think Fury Road was good. He was the one I actually fancied for this. I didn't have a lot of bets over in Ireland, but I thought he idled sort of after he jumped the last and in the Drimmore, and I thought that he would always want 3 miles given sort of his hurdling form. So yeah, it all worked out well for me, I suppose. But yeah, look, is he going to be a player in the RSA in any other year? So yes, definitely. But there's two special ones about, and you'd imagine that he's going to have to improve a lot more. But look, he's done everything right in that race. And yeah, to be honest with you, he's a good horse. Run Wild Fred. I'm interested to hear what you said there, Mark. I've seen him as a National Hunt sort of horse. And I think, if anything, in previous years, when we've sort of looked back on that race, any horse that is second in a Grade One and looks like they need further, you'd be going, oh wow, they're definitely red hot. So it's very interesting this year that we're sort of looking at him going, well, he's got beaten, and that sort of impacts his chances more negatively. It just further cements sort of how good a division this is. And interesting to see what he can do going forward.
And then we had the Matheson Hurdle, in which the new king of Christmas, Sharjah, won for the fourth time If you lumped on at short odds, you might have been having kittens at various stages. Mark, he won in the end, and maybe he was always gonna.
He delivers as he always does this time of year, yeah. And it's funny because his record then at the Dublin Racing Festival, you know, Irish champion hurdle time hasn't been spectacular. So I know earlier in the season they had suggested maybe they might bypass the Irish champion and go straight to Cheltenham. But, you know, in a champion hurdle division that's lacking standout threats to Honeysuckle, you know, this horse's record away from Honeysuckle is pretty exceptional. When he doesn't have to face her, he wins so often. But when he does run into the big sky blue wall, it doesn't really happen too well. He runs well, but she just looks cut from a different cloth. But this was, taking nothing away from him here, he was very, very good. And the race, again, as we talked about in a few occasions here, the hurdle been taken out has made life a little bit tricky. As far as losing rides go this week, I thought Jack Kennedy and Zanna here was very, very good. It was up there as one of the better ones. He gave his horse every chance. I thought he kicked at the right moments. He forced Charger to go out onto the cut-up ground from a couple of days before. He really gave his horse every chance. And in fairness to Zanna here, like a four-year-old who's had a handful of runs over hurdles compared to Charger, who has been at every big two-mile contest in Ireland and you know, at Cheltenham as well. I thought it was a super effort from him. And I'd say Connections wouldn't mind having another go at Charger if they did. Should there be no Honeysuckle in an Irish champion hurdle, God forbid, I'm sure they'd love another crack at Charger because, you know, we see it time and time again with four-year-olds when they're trying to step up from their juvenile season to take on their elders and go into senior company. It's a hard ask. You know, we see it with novices, it's hard, but particularly for the four-year-olds stepping up. And this guy he's not let them down, you know, and it was a muddling race in the Morgiana. You know, you could easily kind of say that it didn't suit him too well. I thought this was really, really encouraging from his point of view. Like, he's not a staying hurdle horse. I could probably do it to a horse when he's going to be five next year. But I will say there has to be a big day in him before long. I know Triumph Hurdle backers could look away now because I don't want to be jeering in front of you. But like, for all his record at the moment, he's got more seconds in grade ones and placed efforts in grade ones and wins. I was very, very encouraged by what I saw from him. He's a really, really likeable horse.
I tell you what, if Charger was able to talk to us, I bet he would say, you know, just give me one crack at Honeysuckle at level weights, please. That's not too much to ask. James, what did you take from this race? I mean, I've always been interested in San Juan. Of course, we remember him as such a taking county hurdle winner when lots of people wanted to back him. But he hasn't gone on to prove himself at grade one level. This is just as good as it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's probably quite a fair reflection. I mean, watching this race and sort of enjoying it for what it is, I think we possibly are all a bit guilty of getting too excited about Cheltenham, and we sort of see this horse as a two-time champion hurdle runner-up rather than a four-time winner of a Matheson hurdle. Coming back year after year is a huge, hugely difficult thing to do, especially at the top level. And I think this horse just deserves a hell of a lot of credit. You know, he's come back, he's triumphed when other horses have not turned up, to be honest, in the last 3 years, but this time the attention was on him and he delivered with a performance that just needed him to really throw everything at it towards the end. As I agree with Mark, it was a fabulous ride from Jack Kennedy, and he very close caught him out. It's exactly what anyone who wanted Zanna here would have wanted to see, but Charger just found that bit more and he's done it again. And an incredible horse, and yeah, I suppose going forward, of course, he would love to have a crack at Honeysuckle on level weights, but I think there's a few that wouldn't mind that as well, to be honest. Good horse, wonderful horse. Whether he wins the champion hurdle, we'll see, but you know, this is an achievement in itself, and I think he deserves plenty of credit for it.
James, forgive me for asking when I don't know the answer to this question, were you at Newbury yesterday for the Challow?
No, I was not. That was the other day, James Byrne. I was watching closely though. Stage Star, I thought he was very, very good. But I just sort of wonder how his form is going to stack up compared to the Irish. I think the Irish novice hurdlers are just a little bit better. And we mentioned sort of Journey With Me. He's a horse that I'm really intrigued by. We know about his reputation. We know he's bitten Kill Krupp there in a maiden hurdle. Stage Style's interesting as well because they're sort of doing this whole we're not going to talk about Cheltenham thing. He's owned by the owners group. I'm sure he will turn up at Cheltenham because it's just too irresistible, isn't it? A very, very good horse, but I'm just not totally convinced he's going to be a festival winner at this point in time. But a very good horse, and look, winning the Challow Hurdle is no bad thing, is it?
I'd say it's a really exciting thing. I mean, horses like Denman and Brave Man's Game have done it in the past. Mark, what sort of prospect is Stage Star in your eyes?
Yeah, he's definitely on the up. I still think he's got another way to go to be proper Ballymore, bang there, fighting it out. But you can't fault what he's done. And he keeps winning. He keeps winning by decent margins as well. I think as well as that, he's might maybe not just a here and now horse. There will be, like Paul Nicholls is excellent at eking every last bit out of them. And, look at his bumper form. I didn't think he was the finished article there either for all he won on debut. I thought, entry run looked more, not totally long-term prospect, but I just think he's not just a here and now horse, but he might just find it a little bit, the water's a little bit deep come Ballymore time, if that's where they end up going. Back to entry again would be interesting, but I'd obviously love to see him part of the fabric of the Ballymore.
Very good. Well, so just an absolute ton of good racing over the festive season. And, my own experience was that, it's one of those times when you just, there's so many excuses to have a bet. And at the end of it, hopefully you come out ahead. But I couldn't pretend that the betting strategy was particularly organized over the last few days. Of course, if you yourselves are having a bet, hopefully you're all doing so responsibly as well as successfully. Chaps, I'm going to ask you now, if you had to take one horse away from that we've seen running the last 7 days as a horse that you're interested in backing for any Cheltenham race whatsoever, what would it be? Mark, start with you.
I can't get over how good Gallop and Deschamps was, and I'm trying to stop myself from falling down the road of being overly enthusiastic about, a piece of novice form, a beginner's chase form. I don't want to fall down the Envoy Allen trap again. It's kind of like you've been in a relationship that didn't work out well. You don't want to end up getting hurt again. But I just feel this fella is absolutely... put it this way, if he ran the Gold Cup, what price would he be? He'd probably be around 6 or 7 to 1, wouldn't he, if he went and won the Flowgas at the Dublin Racing Festival in a similar style? I couldn't get over how good he was. And I know the Festival Novices Chase is where looking to go, the Brown Advisory, but... Well, I say that it looks like they're talking about in that regard. They haven't exactly nailed it down, as far as I'm aware. I would really love to see, given the kind of pace and enthusiasm he showed, I would love to see him actually in the Turners against Bob Olinger. Now, how likely that is, it's probably unlikely, but I would absolutely love to see it happen. That's a race that we've seen before with Willie Mullins, that horses that actually have a bit of stamina can really benefit in it. And I would love to see him have a crack at that. I know it's unlikely, but if Anton was to go I missed with Bob Olinger between now and then. I think he's 7 to 1 for it. If I was having a conservative small, I might look in that direction. Because away from that, it's probably a race that's lacking standout players. It was a real, real wow performance for me.
Do you know, I have a feeling that Willie won't be committing himself to decision on that in the next couple of days.
Go away.
There's the good thing, right? Your bet will still be alive until declaration stage. And that's when you'll find out what he's declared. James, same question to you. What are you thinking about Cheltenham-wise after this week?
Yeah, I think if I mention Saint Seagal again, I think I'm going to annoy our listeners. So I'm going to ignore him. It is a bit of an obvious one, but Fernie Hollow, I was really taken by it to the level I sort of wanted to pick holes in his performance and see something at a bigger price. But I just thought the way he did it was really, really good. And I think that in this sort of period where we've seen so many good horses, this one's just one that perhaps has gone under the radar slightly. I just feel that he is going to continue to improve. And I feel that Ed Stone sets that standard that he needs to see. And Fernie Hollow perhaps is there and can improve again to reach it. So I know he's a short price favourite, but there's going to be quite a few of them on the first day of the Cheltenham Festival, but as it seems. And he'd be the one that I'd really want to back now. I'd say he's almost approaching sort of one of the best bets I'd have at the meeting so far. Again, a boring one, but I was really taken by the way he did it.
I don't know if I'd call it boring, but when he's 2 to 1 already, I don't think he's sailing under many radars, I must say. If you're asking me, I'd say it's surprising to see bits of 10 to 1 about Manel Endo for the Gold Cup. I think he's just going to be one of those horses that keeps turning up at Cheltenham in the middle of March and running his best race. And you don't necessarily have to pay all that much attention to what goes on in between times. He went off too quick, taking on Frodon at the outside of the King George. Yard's not going all that great. I think that 10 to 1 is a big price. And I haven't done the
Will you have Jack Kennedy back in the play as well, Chris, would you?
Aye. Yeah, that's no bad thing. Nothing against the jockey from
Boston, but God, no. Yeah.
But yeah,
he's got such a tune out of him jumping. Last year, it was the way he jumped was particularly taken, wasn't it?
There's just so many reasons why you can expect him to bounce back. And I haven't done the legwork to know this for sure, but there can't be many Gold Cup winners that have been 10-1 to do it again the next year, you know, by this stage of the following season. So that appeals to me. Very good. We've got lots of good racing coming over the weekend. We've got the New Year's Day card at Cheltenham. I see the decks are through. There's two really enticing big field handicaps. There's the Relkeel and the Dipper as well, and some good influential racing in Ireland as well. We've got Album Photo coming back, as he always does, for the New Year's Day chase at Tremor. That's a real Willie Mullins fest, that. There's six horses I can see entered. I don't think I've got the final decks at this stage. Five from his yard and hardline for Gordon Elliott, who might still run. And also at Fairy House, there's a Grade 3 mare's chase, which hopefully will feature Put the Kettle On, Mount Ida, LMA, and a couple of others. So some really excellent racing. Guys, what would your nap be for the coming few days? You don't have to go for those high-profile races I've mentioned, but just get us a winner. Mark, start with you.
This will not be beaten.
I think you touched on it there. Willie Mullins is going to win the New Year's Day chase, you'd imagine, at Tremor, but I'm not putting up Album Photo. Ellie May, the conditions of that race, getting £7 from Put the Kettle On and getting three from Mount Ida, despite kind of being £3 better rated than Mount Ida anyway, I think that can make the difference. Look, you have to forgive her run at Aintree last time that where she just wasn't herself, but Willie Mullins, we've seen all week how the machine is absolutely rolling in full flow, so... For me, Ellie May at Fairy House on Saturday in the 2:40, the John Chish Fowler Memorial Mayor's Chase. Give me Ellie May.
I don't know if we have odds for that race yet, but do you have a sort of price in mind that you're hoping for?
Sure. The bigger the better, I'd hope. But I think it's a too difficult race to price because Put the Kettle On is quite tricky to weigh up. If Henry's were absolutely flying, you're saying a champion chase winner, you know, how can you kind of have her not too far away from the head of affairs? But then... You know, Ellie May herself is coming off a disappointing run too. Mount Ida, I'm happier with her going this direction than going left-handed. And she showed plenty of well-being last time at Clonmel. I think it was, or Thurles. I think it was Clonmel it was, yeah. It's a very, very difficult race to price up. If I was getting kind of 13-8, 7-4 Ellie May, I'd be very happy. Might be a little bigger, but it's a very, very tricky one to price up.
James, what's your nap going to be?
Yeah, well, we're all talking about how races on New Year's Day can influence the bigger races. Well, the 2:25 at Exeter will have significant bearing on the Devon National. Last year's winner is there, Dawson City, a few of the old names. But I think this is going to be a race for an improving horse by the name of Goshaven, who made pretty encouraging chasing debut last time at Exeter over the same course and distance, but on ground that would have been way too quick. His hurdling form looks really good. I think he's going to be one of those that will be improving all the time, whereas a few of the others he's up against will probably have that Devon National in the back of their minds. He looks to me like he's well handicapped, will improve for going fences. And again, as some of the others will really want a bit of a more of a stamina test, 3 miles to him looks absolutely spot on. So hopefully he'll be around 3-4 to 1. So Goshaven in the 2:25 at Exeter on New Year's Day.
Very good. I quite like the sound of that. I'm looking myself at a race that's called the Paddy Power New Year's Day Handicap Chase. It's the 2 o'clock Cheltenham on Saturday. 16 runners, you know, because there's no fun in tackling these four-run races. They're just, I still get wrong. I'm going with Galahad Quest. He ran a really interesting, promising race. I think lots of people noticed the promise in it. In the Paddy Power Gold Cup. Still only a five-year-old, so I think that was quite a learning experience for him. And he was nearest at the finish in fifth among some quality horses there. Just a bit more of a test of stamina that will be involved in Saturday's race. I think that'll help him take the necessary step forward. He has since been out. He was a mid-race faller in the entry race won by Clan Legend, so hopefully that hasn't left its mark. But I think he's definitely got a decent prize in him off the rating that he's got. That's Galahad Quest, 2 o'clock Cheltenham on Saturday, and I think 8-1 is the price that he's been chalked up as. So many thanks, guys. That was good fun. Thanks for keeping me straight as we went through all of those Christmas races. I hope all of you listeners have enjoyed this bumper edition of the Racing Post podcast, and that you've made more money during the festive period than we have. If you're betting this weekend, do please remember to bet responsibly at all times. And thanks for listening.